spend at least 5 or 6 fewer, and then we'll see where we'll go from there, discussing a serious problem, and I think we can see serious contemporary problem, and I think we can see what this problem is by looking at the material that I've assembled in the first 3 or 4 pages of this handout. So let me begin by reminding you of how central in modern Jewish history the Eichmann trial was in the early 60s, was it, around 1961, something like that. Prior to the Eichmann trial, and probably prior to the Six-Day War in 1967, Jewish consciousness really was trying to suppress the events of the Shoah, the Holocaust. Now, for better or for worse, it's become a central ingredient in Jewish identification. So one might think that, like most people who actually were observers or listeners or reading the press reviews to the trial as it came out, or read, for example, the prosecutor's book describing the events, that one would recognize this as a central positive event in Jewish history, being able at least to come to grips with the horrible facts of what were going on at the time of the Shoah. But I want to cite an editorial comment by the editor of Hamaor. This is a rabbinical monthly which appears in Brooklyn. I think it still appears, and I think Rav Pardes is still the editor. And if you turn to my page 1, he published in that journal an article whose title is Chomer Isur Hitdayanut Bebeit HaMishpat Lefnei Shoftim Chafshiim Ba'achaot from Dinat Yisrael. The severity of the prohibition of judging, appearing to adjudicate matters in the civil court before secular judges or irreligious judges in the state of Israel.
Civil, you mean not religious, not Jewish?
No, there are Jewish judges in Israel, the Israeli civil court system, but not everybody in the state of Israel is an observant Jew. This is a startling but true fact. The state of Israel consists of about 20% people whom we would characterize as Shomrei Mitzvot, in the sense that they try to keep all the halachot, and consists of about 10% of people who regard themselves as secularists, and then a huge 70% of people in the middle who in some sense regard themselves as traditional and have a respect or a love or some feeling of positive identification with Jewish holidays, practices, and so on, but are not strictly Shomer Mitzvot in the standard sense. So we might subdivide the classes into, just for simplicity, Haredi, Masorati, and Chiloni, with Haredi representing maybe 20% of the population. And I'm including in Haredi more or less all the people sitting around this table for simplicity in classification.
That's just made like this one.
And then 70% Masorati and 10% perhaps Chiloni.
But Masorati in Israel is conservative.
There's no such thing as a conservative Jewish movement. I'm using the word traditional in the sense that someone who would have a Seder on Pesach and who might go to shul occasionally on Shabbat, but would not refrain from watching television or maybe driving his car. I'm talking it in terms of practice, using the American categories of which particular umbrella organization you're affiliated with has no meaning whatsoever in Israel. But in any event, I'm going back now 40 years approximately to this editorial and this article, but many of the judges in the Israeli civil court system are not Shomrei Mitzvot.
I mean, if they were.
For instance, if they were, the fact that they were working in the Israeli civil court system
wouldn't help very much.
They were
I don't know the details of how the judges are appointed. But now
this was written 40 years ago?
This was written at the time of the Eichmann trial. Okay? And the editor sees fit to add as an editorial comment to this theoretical article about how sinful it is to appear before the Israeli court system. Ha'arat ha'ma'arechet, here's an editor's comment. The mishpat ha'tzorer Eichmann, in the trial of the evildoer Eichmann, yimach shmo, ba'ula ha'id ba'archaot shel ha'medina, various people came to testify in this trial. People who call themselves rabbis or heads of kehilot and so on. Ein kol safek, the editor adds, there's no doubt, the very fact that they appeared before irreligious judges, they have raised their hand in rebellion against the laws of Moshe Rabbeinu. Any of the people that actually appeared in the Eichmann trial as witnesses are therefore called Rishaim, v'chayavim nidui, and they should be put in chair. This is so. Therefore, one gets the impression that appearing before the Eichmann trial as a witness when it was judged by the court, the State of Israel, is almost as a serious offense as who knows what, the sins of the Nazis themselves, if one is taking this impression. I mean, really terrible. What you might take this to mean as, you might take this to be just some serious emotional reaction of the typical Orthodox or ultra-Orthodox or Aguda-type Jew to the existence of a secular state of Israel in 1960, 61. This is sort of some of the people around this table might find this comment slightly offensive. Some people might not. But my point is that this statement, which one might think is an extreme position by a firmly anti-Zionist rav in Brooklyn, doesn't represent the mainstream of halachic writing on this subject, and unfortunately, that's not the case. So let's turn to the next page. Okay? Here is a decision, on my page 2, a decision by the Israeli Rabbinical Court. So here you have a branch of the Israeli government, namely the Rabbinical Court of the State of Israel, discussing the following problem: whether and to what extent there is a prohibition against appearing in the Israeli court system,
of which they are a part,
of which government they are a part. Right. So the summary at the beginning of this particular psak says, "Isur hapniyali achaot hamur ma'od," the prohibition against the use of non-rabbinical courts is very severe. Ha'isur hazeh chal gam lagavei batei hamishpat shel hamedina kfi shehem hayom. This prohibition applies to use of the courts of the State of Israel as they exist today.
When?
This was about 20 years ago. I don't remember the exact date, but it's approximately 20 years ago. Ha'isur hazeh chal hal yesh lehistapek im ha'isur kolel gam et batei adin la'avodah. There's some question as to whether this serious prohibition against the use of this court system applies also to the labor courts. Ki yitachein shehem rak beit din shel boruot. It's conceivable that we might believe that that's just the board of arbitration and not a court, and therefore the serious prohibition. Okay? Chova mutelet al beit hadin lemnoa min hatzdadim lehikashel beisur zeh. There is an obligation on the rabbis or on the rabbinical courts to prevent the sides from being from falling into the error of this particular. Okay. Let's go to the paragraph. חלה גם על ההתדיינות בבתי המשפט של המדינה כפי שהם היום. This, after going through the whole list of where there are all of these prohibitions against the use of civil courts, the rabbinical court, as Jonathan says, which is a branch of the Israeli government, says that this applies equally well to the courts as they exist today. Kein katav b'inyan ze harav harashi l'Yisrael ha'gon rabbi Yitzhak Isaac Herzog zefer tzadik levracha, and then they quote from Rabbi Herzog. The quote is accurate but out of context. When we get to Rabbi Herzog, which will be in about 4 or 5 weeks, we'll see what he actually said, but I do have another quote from him which is very relevant that I'll read today. Ulada'ati, this is quoting Rabbi Herzog, Elef pa'amim gavua mikol yachido yehudim o kehilam Yisrael ha'ochim la'acha'ot shel goyim. It's 1,000 times more serious than a sin that when a Jew appears before a non-Jewish court, kisha'am Yisrael ba'artzo, when the nation, the nation of Israel in its own land, v'tor kosher kazeh, dan al pi chukim zarim, absorbs foreign laws. Hamabli ein Elokim b'Yisrael, is there no God in Israel? Kvar dan hatashbatz zichron al vacha al eila hamitainim ba'archaot, afilu shel hamuslimim, the Rabbi Duran, who lived in the 15th century, already discussed those people who appear before the Islamic judges, ki'ilu miyakrim shem shel alilim. It's as if they give honor to idols. Shezehu echad hanimukim lachoma ha'isur shel tainut barachaot shel goyim, sha'af al pi sha'al muslimim bevadai einam obdei avodilim klal v'klal, even though Muslims are not idolaters, harei einam makirim b'tokva shel Torah Moshe. They do not believe in the validity and the authority of the Torah of Moshe. Ve'ein tzarich lomar shel Torah Chazal, and certainly not do they accept rabbinical authority. Shelefi ta'anatam, according to their claim of the Quran, kvar pak'a, the Mosaic law has been abrogated. Ulefichach heim danim al mishpatim mishelahem. Ve'al kein ha'olech lefneihem miyaker toratam u'mavatel torat Moshe v'chazal. So therefore, this is still a quote from the Tashbatz, someone who appears before the Islamic court is honoring their set of laws and is belittling the Torah Moshe. V'danohu k'miyaker shem Elokim u'miyata ani omer. Now back to Rabbi Herzog. Sha'am Yisrael v'tor she'kazel v'eretz kadsho, kishehu mazniach Torateinu HaKadosha, v'dan al pi chok zav, when he leaves our holy Torah and decides cases on the basis of a foreign code, afal pi she'achalku einenu mityamer l'nvo minkor al enoshi, even though this code doesn't pretend to derive from some supernatural source, ve'ein lo ofi dati, and even though this code doesn't have any particularly religious character, b'chol zot, harehu bo'et b'torat Elokim chayim k'fi shemasruha p'rshu ha'advi'im v'rabbeinu zal v'avotenu ha'poskim m'moshe rabbeinu ad hayom v'totzaotav shel matzav machfir o'machiv ze mi yishur. This is all a quote from the first chief rabbi of Israel, Rabbi Herzog, but as I said, taken slightly out of context.
Specifically, he was writing about the Constitution.
He was then writing about the Constitution. Let's see right here, Alan. So that's a quote from Rabbi Herzog. V'chein pasak moran ba'al ha'chazon ish zal v'sifro al-mesechet Sanhedrin v'siman kefaro dalit. The Chazon Ish, in his book on Sanhedrin, says, v'ein nafkuta bein imba lefnei nachrim. It doesn't matter whether someone appears in court before non-Jews, uvein Yisrael sheshofet al pi chukim beduyim. or if he appears before a Jewish judge who decides things on the case on the basis of imagined laws. I don't know what a good translation of Beduyim is. Va'od hadavar yoter magune, and the matter is even more atrocious. Shehemiru, or deserving of rebuke. Shehemiru et nishpatei haTorah al nishpat haHeva. They've exchanged the laws of the Torah with nonsensical laws. Ve'im yaskimu b'nei ha'ir al zeh, if all the townsfolk of a particular city draft such a municipal law, ein b'haskamatam mamash, their decision has no validity. Ve'im yahofu al zeh, and if they insist on imposing their municipal laws, mishpatam gazlanut ba'oshek, their decisions is just outright robbery and oppression. So if the municipality of Tel Aviv passes some parking regulation and imposes a fine for parking, and the parking court collects such a fine, it's highway robbery, says the Chazavish. Okay? ובעניין זה דנו והכריעו עוד מגדולי רבני דורנו בהלכה פסוקה היא כאמור. And this matter has been discussed by many other leading rabbis of our time, and this is a clear decision. Okay? So this is now, as I repeat, the Israeli rabbinical court declaring it a sin to appear before the Israeli civil court in matters of a judicial dispute. Okay? Now this is not just a purely theoretical question, because we do have really a conflict of authority here. So for this I'm just going to take a relatively recent example. Here's a case which, my next page three, here's a case which was in Haaretz of this summer.
But only civil, not criminal. They're only alluding to a civil, or they're alluding to both civil and criminal?
Civil and criminal, but...
criminal as well.
Sure.
Although in a criminal case, the state is prosecuted, so you don't have...
That's what I'm asking you.
But as a witness, even in the iPhone trial...
All right.
All secular.
Which is criminal.
Okay. So here's an article from this summer's Haaretz. Butal psak din shel beit din rabbani, ha'anish grusha shepantal lebeit ha'mishpat ha'machozi. This was a decision by the Israeli Supreme Court to overrule a decision of the Israeli Rabbinical Court, which punished a divorcee who actually turned to the Israeli Civil Court to get the child support for her children increased. So let's read the case. Let's read the case, okay? Bagatz. In Israel, you have a notion of a bagatz, which is doesn't exist in the United States, namely that if someone feels that an injustice has been done to him, he can appeal directly. In England, it used to be appealing directly to the crown. And instead of appealing to the crown, one appeals to the Beit Din Gavoa Letzedek, which is the Israeli Supreme Court acting as a high court of justice to overturn or deal with either improper acts of the police or of the legislature or of other courts. Okay?
Injunctive relief.
Injunctive judicial relief. Bagatz bitel etmol psak din shel beit din harabani ha'azori b'Be'er Sheva. The district rabbinical court in Be'er Sheva made a decision which was overturned yesterday by the Israeli Supreme Court. Sheha'anish isha grusha, the Israeli rabbinical district court in Be'er Sheva, punished a divorcee, al shepanta lebeit ha'mishpat ha'mechozi, because she turned to the district civil court, kidei lahagdil et ha'mazonot, in order to increase the child support payment sheba'ala l'sha'avar, that her former husband chayev l'shalem l'yiladeha. V'kach קיבלו השופטים אהרון בלק, אליהו מצא ומישאל חשן את העתירה שהגישה את אישה. This committee of three, that is the president of the Supreme Court, Aaron Barak and two others, accepted the plea of the woman, באמצעות עורך דין רון ויינשטוק נגד פסק הדין. Here are the details of the case. בני הזוג התגרשו על יסוד הסכם גירושין שאושר בבית הדין הרבני. The couple got divorced on the basis of a divorce agreement which was certified by the local rabbinical court. בהסכם נקבע כי הבעל יעביר לאישה את חלקו בדירתן המשותפת, that the husband would give the wife his share of their common apartment, וישלם לשני ילדיהם מזונות בסך 600 שקל לחודש. We would pay child support in the amount of 600 shekels per month. אבל לאחר מכאן הגישה אישה תביעה בשמם של הילדים, the woman applied on the basis of the children לבית המשפט המחוזי בבאר שבע להגדיל את סכום המזונות, to increase the child support there. בסופו של דבר הגיעו הצדדים להסכם פשרה שלפיו הוגדל הסכום ל-1,500 שקל. They agreed to came to an agreement before the civil court to raise the child support payment to 1,500 shekel. ובית המשפט נתן לו תוקף של פסק דין. Okay, so we had an initial agreement in the rabbinical court that the woman gets the apartment and the children get 600 shekel a month child support, and then the wife, the divorced wife, turned to the district court and they increased the child support payment. The husband, after 2 years of paying 1,500 shekel a month, decided to go back to the rabbinical court and return the get that money back. And should say, Beit HaDin kibel et ha-tviyah, the rabbinical court accepted the claim of the husband, v'katav psak dino ki ha-isha hefera et haskem ha-gerushin, v'glal pniyata le-beit ha-mishpat ha-mechozi. The wife had abrogated the divorce settlement because of the fact that she returned to the Israeli civil court. V'al kein haskem ze mevutal, and therefore the original divorce settlement was nullified by the wife. So not only should the child support payment be reduced to the original 600 shekel, but the wife is to be punished by losing the share of her apartment that she got as a result of the original rabbinical court payment. The woman then appealed to the Supreme Rabbinical Court to stop the carrying out of this particular judgment. Ach lo ne'enta. She received no response from the Israeli Supreme Rabbinical Court. Ha'isha atra eifo la bagatz. Therefore, the woman appealed to the bagatz, to the Supreme Court. Pesak hadin shekibel et ha'atira kava ha'shofet Barak ki hesken mezonot bein horim אינו מחייב את הילדים, that the agreement for child support between parents does not obligate the children. ועל כן, בית הדין הרבני אינו יכול לדון במזונות הילדים בלי הסכמתם. That the court cannot affix child support without their agreement. What the agreement of a two-year-old or a three-year-old is, it's not clear. Yes, לפיכך, לא היה בית הדין הרבני בבאר שבע מוסמך לדון בתביעת הבעל להקטין את סכום המזונות. Therefore, the Israeli rabbinical court in Be'er Sheva was not authorized to reduce the amount of the child support payment. על אחד כמה וכמה שלא היה מוסמך לצוות עד אישה להחזיר לבעל את חלקו בדירה, פסק ברק. השופט הוסיף כי הבעל אף לא ביקש זאת מבית הדין. The husband didn't even demand this from the Israeli rabbinical court. This was their own decision to punish the woman for committing such a terrible sin as turning to the Israeli civil court. So on its own behalf, the Israeli rabbinical court in Be'er Sheva decided to punish the woman for daring to deal with a child support payment in front of the Israeli civil court, and without any request on the part of the husband, decided to return to the husband the half of the apartment that he had ceded to her in the original divorce settlement. And what's more striking is that the Israeli chief rabbinical court did not feel capable of intervening in this matter because they never answered the wife's appeal.
But this is even their grounds for punishing her seems to be that she violated their agreement. Not that it's a sin to go to this civil court.
Believe me, the ideological component here is
I have no doubt.
Why did they even allow the 600? Why did they allow you to keep that? Because that was part of the agreement.
No,
they could have
pulled
everything out.
They could have.
That must have been just because of Rachmanis and the children.
Probably.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
You see, I think that the chief rabbinical court, if that's the right term, erred in the excess of its punishment for the wife. Otherwise, it might have been not the decision. In other words, to take the half of the apartment back seemed excessive on the basis of.
Yeah, but I mean, the reason for this punishment is, of course, not because of that there was some cancellation of the agreement, but because of the conflict of power here. There's a power struggle between the rabbinical courts on the one hand and the civil courts on the other.
Well, it's a couple of pieces that you have to really understand beforehand, like enforcement power. Who has the enforcement power of the rabbinical court? Do they put it in the hands of the civil administrators to enforce a rabbinical court decree? Is that how it's done?
But the police will do it.
The police will do it.
And, okay. So actually, then it can be overturned, it would seem, by a secular court as well. I mean,
it's
of the police power or something of that nature. I mean, they are using a secular policing organization to enforce their orders.
Well, that's a very good point, and that's part of the whole history of the subject, because there are two things that we should bear in mind in dealing with this. One is dealing here with a very touchy subject of what is or is not the scope of halacha when it comes to everyday life, especially in Dinei Mamonot. One is dealing with the fact that for a period of 2,500 or some odd years, with maybe some short exception during the Maccabean Revolt, there was no Jewish government which was effective in being able to enforce court decisions without the aid of some other governmental authority. So on the one hand, one is dealing here with emotional aspects having to do with the possible existence of a Jewish state which is not based on the halacha. And it's even more complicated by the fact that none of the rabbinical authorities was ever prepared, with maybe isolated exceptions like Rabbi Hirsch in some of the century, was ever prepared even for such an eventuality to think about it carefully enough. I'm going to quote a different quote from Rabbi Herzog, and this is from an article that he wrote in a journal in a Jewish forum in New York in May of 1932. The Ba'ad Araha Ratzot had a lot of authority, which was, and we will find during the course of our history, that there were many times when the local Jewish authorities even were able to carry out the death penalty and many other such punishments, but they were all done with the backing of the state. Okay?
The police were out of none.
Right. So here, this is a book of Rabbi Herzog's called The Main Institutions of Jewish Law, which was probably written in the late 1930s, but he himself is quoting an article that he wrote in May of 1932, where he's now discussing the issue of punishments and so on and so forth. He says, until that will ever have taken place, no Jewish court could inflict the death penalty even for the crime of homicide. That Jewish courts are not authorized in current times to inflict capital punishment. The difficulty in question is therefore a matter which could only arise in the Messianic age and need not enter into any practical calculations affecting the reconstitution of the Jewish state in Palestine. But of course, in view of the actual position, the idea of a Jewish state in Palestine, as distinct from a Jewish national home, quite irrespective of the restoration of the temple, is in itself rather a messianic hope than a question of practical politics. So, writing 16 years, and publishing this 12 years or 14 years before the establishment of the State of Israel, Rabbi Herzog, who is certainly the most enlightened, one of the most enlightened of our rabbinical authorities in this century, couldn't conceive of the existence of a Jewish state. And therefore, the problem that we are facing is one of how to deal with a Jewish state in non-messianic terms when the basic rabbinical authorities haven't prepared themselves for it. Yes?
Rather absurd, significant of the question there. In terms of the Jewish state, how many women say it on the Jewish Bank of Israel?
Zero. And again, the issue of dealing with Jewish women judges, for example, was something that Rabbi Hirschenson was quite aware of and dealt with, I thought, remarkably well. But after all, remember, he was kicked out of Palestine and had to live most of his life in Hoboken, New Jersey, as a result. Rav Uziel, dealt with the issue of women judges, I thought, pretty effectively. But once again, the vast spectrum of rabbinical authority never came to grips with dealing with this problem, with the exception of these two rabbis that I've just decided. So this is a serious...
There were no women judges in America either.
That's right. There were no women judges in America.
I point my finger at Israel.
Well, there's no women judges in America in the 19th century. And we saw last time, or several times ago, that on the issue of the women's right to vote, if you remember, Rav Kook said that it's against one of the most basic fundamental principles of Judaism to give women the right to vote. This was in 1920. And...
Yeah, but when did they decide to give women the suffrage?
That's right. So the question is that we now don't live in the 19th century or in the 18th century, but leaving the 20th century, and we have to come to grips with these problems. And the issue of the notion of jurisdiction, self-government, modes of such, are more, are central issues that can only be discussed with the aid of a historical perspective, but it has to have to be thought of in terms of current circumstances and looking forward as to what the actual possibilities are. Yes.
Wasn't Rabbi Herzog aware that already there was a semi-state in Israel, like the Sochnut was existing by then, I believe?
I just quoted you what he wrote. I mean, if you want to argue with him, there's no way that I can help you on this matter.
Well, he says a national home is conceivable.
Yeah.
The state is not.
Right. Rabbi, just to give you a list of some of the other...
There is oppressive female judges in the Torah, you know,
there are in the Tanakh.
In the Tanakh, right.
Okay.
Deborah.
Okay, the seven prophets.
Are they without judges.
I touched off that just so I got
it.
There
is precedent.
Okay, let me skip the, I had a quote from Rabbi Tzvi Pesach Frank, but let me skip to one of our favorite authors, Rav Avadya Yosef, on this matter. Let's turn to my page 9. Near where that star is on the right-hand column. So he's discussing one of Rav Chaim Palaji's tshuvot, and he said, "Re'eo the sefer kukot ha'chayim ayin shemu v'emes shapiru v'makom shenahagul l'dayen v'zeh etzel ha'chaot." Even in those places where the custom was to go to civil court. Now he's not talking about Israel. He's talking about using the civil courts in a place like the United States, for example. Minhag kazeh otiot kehenomu. This kind of a custom is just signs of hell. Ve'ein l'smoch aleihem klal, kumo she'amu b'mesechet Rosh Hashanah, ki nahagu b'makom yisur ha'mishkat kinen lehu. Just because that in a certain particular place their custom was to violate a prohibition, does that mean that we let them do that? Gorei od b'shal t'shol t'hafei aron azriel, v'shal rav pa'alim, v'daki af al pish ha'as... ha'samchut ha'kim ha'mayom mitam ha'memshala l'adun b'dinei ma'manot v'nachalot, לבתי המשפט החילוניים שלהם גדול השופטים שם יהודים הם. Even though the authority to judge civil cases today is given to the civil courts and the judges there are Jewish, על כל זה ברור כי לפי דין תורתנו הקדושה התובע עד חברו בבית דין שלהם גדול אבנו מנסוף. Anyone who sues his neighbor in an Israeli civil court has committed a sin which is unbearable. Vahu biklal masha pasku Rambam v'atur v'ashulchan aruch v'shem mishpat shekol hadan v'achaot shelahem harei zeh rasha u'keilu chireif v'gidei v'herim yad v'torat nosher aveim. Kemulvad sh'ashoftim einam yodim klal v'dinei ha'torah l'shvot bein ish l'reyeh v'alpi choshen mishpat v'aposkin. Certainly, since the civil judges don't know the choshen mishpat, therefore how to decide such cases. Ukva amu chazal lefnehem, velo lefnei akum, velo lefnei hegitot. Ve'od shehadavar yadua mufosam, shehen danim alpi chukot akum. That the courts judge on the basis of idolatrous laws. Ve'gam machshirim le'edut eid echad. They allow the testimony of a single person, a karol, or a relative, or the isha, or they allow a woman to testify, or pasul. For rabim mehem ba'atzmam psulim ladun l'fi ha'alacha. And many of them themselves are not fit to be judges according to the halacha. V'lo yikached ki shamati divat rabim atorim miderach ha'seichel mitchakim lomar, shekemikevan shekait ha'shoftim yehudim. והממשלה העניקה להם סמכות לדון ולשפוט בדיני ממנות וירושות דינה דמלכות הדינה. At least we should apply the law that says that the governmental law is valid. וחושבים שהותרה הרצועה להתדיין לפניהם. And that therefore on the basis of דינה דמלכות הדינה it should be permissible to appear before them to adjudicate cases. אולם הבל יפצחיהם. This is complete and utter nonsense. And if they just thought about it a bit, they would understand. This is what makes the matter even more serious. And these judges have left the source of live waters, HaTalmud v'HaPoskim, lachzov lahem borot nishparim asher lo yachilu mayim, to dig wells which don't hold water, v'danim al pi chukot ha'goyim v'shoftehem, and they adjudicate on the basis of the laws of the goyim and their judges, v'sifrei ha'chukim shelahem, harei ha'machshela gedola shevatayim, the sin is 7 times more serious mi'asher l'dayen v'nei shoftim goyim asher lo nitzvavu me'olam l'adon al pi ha'torah shelon.
This would apply to Jewish judges in the U.S. office.
Of course. Sha'af al pi shabnei noach nitztavu al hadinim, Mikol makom yicholim ladun l'fi sechel ha'anoshi v'lefu v'ot eineihem. The laws that require the B'nai Noach, all nations, to enact a court system doesn't deprive them of the right to judge according to their own understanding. That is, the non-Jewish judges. And they're not obligated to follow the laws of the Torah in detail. Nevertheless, it's an absolute, very serious sin for Jews to appear before non-Jewish judges, even though the non-Jewish judges themselves in the United States or France or Britain are not particularly obligated to follow the Torah. Kal v'chomer l'shoftim Yehudim kael. Certainly, Jewish judges like this. Shehem muzharim u'mishvaim mehar Sinai ladun rak al pi haTorah. They are obligated to follow only the Torah. V'heim panu oref aleha. And they have turned their back to the Torah.
Was this applied with
a
Jewish judge
with
non-Jewish
litigants? Maybe not. V'tachat, we'll come to that in a minute. V'tachat l'shvot al pi chukei haTorah asher yaseh otam ha'adam v'chai bahem. Instead of using the laws of the Torah, which says that that a man will live by them, danim heim al pi chukei ha'otonomi, they use the Ottoman law, v'hamandatory, or the mandatory law, British law, or Turkish law, v'shivchat tikiti reish v'yotah. It's the slave girl and taking the place of her mistress. V'yelchu acharei ha'hevel v'yehavalu. V'al yidei kach miyakrim u'machshivim emeshatei ha'goyim ovdei elilim. And thereby, they give honor to the laws of the non-Jews, these idolaters. Notnim kavod ve'ilui le'elehem, u'kemo sheperush Rashi alachad kama v'kama shadavo asur v'chachlet. So it's certainly prohibited to appear before the these judges. V'hamitayinim v'fneihem, people who actually appear before these courts, ovrim gam al v'fnei yivei lo titein mechshol. They also violate the prohibition of causing someone else to commit a sin,
maybe the judge
or their clients. V'lachein, he says, orech din yorei shamayim. Therefore, a religious lawyer, an observant lawyer, shenidrash liyatzeg v'beit hamishpat adam shotovea mamon mechadero, when he is asked by his client to be his representative as the plaintiff in a case where he's asking somebody else for money, lefi ha'alacha chayav li'mana makach. According to the law, he must desist, not do this.
What is the fundamental difference between the Jewish civil court in Israel and non-Jewish court in America?
As far as this is concerned,
yes,
none. A lawyer in the United States who represents a Jewish client who is suing a non-Jew, another Jewish defendant, according to Rav Ovadia Yosef, is obligated by Jewish law not to represent him in civil court.
Only another non-Jewish defendant.
If there's a Jewish plaintiff trying to get his money back from a Jewish defendant,
right,
then according to this statement of Rav Ovadia Yosef, a Jewish lawyer is prohibited from representing him because he's aiding and abetting in the performance of a sin.
What about the participant, the plaintiff?
They're certainly, the plaintiff certainly has committed a sin.
Even if there's one witness as a Jew, it would seem that the...
He cannot come, the lawyer cannot come with the claim that he's only doing this on the basis of being requested to do so by his client, and therefore the sin is only heaped upon the client, but not upon the lawyer. Who's the lawyer supposed to listen to, his client or to God? To represent a defendant, a Jewish lawyer can represent a Jewish defendant in a non-Jewish court, because all he's trying to do is save him from harm. Ve'im nidrash la'ofia ba'acharot la'kabalat tzav yerusha, if he was asked to appear before a court to get an order of, how do you say, inheritance, an estate, a ruling in the state law, chayav lehimana, he should refuse to do so. Ve'ifneu tam leveitin harabani la'kabal hatzav, he should instruct the various heirs to turn to the rabbinical court to receive an order. V'chein, b'kodesh chazitei l'hagon avir haro'im arot tzvi pesach.